Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Please be advised that Gen X This Is Why contains adult language, and this episode in particular includes discussion of suicide, violence, and sexual assault as it pertains to children. Please keep this in mind when listening. Thank you and enjoy the show. Gen X pro tip, if you're thinking of kidnapping a kid, don't, because you won't get away with it. Hi, and welcome to Gen X That Was a Thing, the podcast where we talk about shit from our childhood that scarred us or affected us in some way. My name is Amy. I'm a proud Gen Xer born in 1977.
And I'm her sister Jenny, born in 1974.
Morning, Jen.
Yeah.
I'm saying morning, but it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
And it's raining and miserable today, and it's like so dark here. It's awful.
It was sleeting here.
Ew, really?
Yeah. Quick question. Did you see the new season of Love is Blind?
Wait, there's another new season of Love is Blind?
Just came out yesterday.
But wait, didn't I just watch a new one that came out like a month ago? 2 months ago?
Well, you were late to the party watching that.
Oh, how long was that out?
A couple months.
But that, I mean, okay, so they released two seasons within a couple months of each other.
I think so. I think they did two this year.
Okay.
This one's in Seattle, and it's wild.
Oh, interesting. That's going to be interesting. No, I did not, obviously. I've been watching Couples Therapy like you were yelling at me to watch.
And?
It's good. I like it.
Oh, it's so good, isn't it?
I'm on season two.
It's so, so good. Do not drink that drink on air.
Oh, my God. Okay.
All right. Jesus. Jenny gets an iced coffee, guys. I've gone through this before. All right, Jenny. Today we're going to talk about, today is true crime edition.
Oh, God.
Now, Jenny loves when we do That Was a Thing because she literally does not prepare in any way.
Yeah.
I give
That's not true. I do an index card.
I give her what to do the index card on.
Okay, but I have to actually do the research.
Mm-hmm. You do. And sometimes I give you a real narrow index card because I don't want you to know anything about the subject.
Right.
Yep. So, you know. So today is a little true crime edition. Today we're going to talk about Stephen Stainer.
I didn't even know that was his name. Like, I saw this on our calendar. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
So this is the story of the boy made famous by surviving a 7-year-long abduction in Northern California in the 1970s. Stephen's story was shared with the world in a miniseries we know called I Know My First Name is Stephen.
That I remember.
And it aired on NBC in 1983, I believe. And yes. 45 million people watched it.
Yeah, that was a thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a thing.
See how that works.
Jenny, how old were you when you saw this? What do you remember watching? Like, what do you remember about watching the movie for the first time?
I don't know how old I was. I was probably 10-ish.
Okay.
Right? It was in 83? Because I definitely saw it when it came out.
Okay. All right.
I don't know why mom was letting us watch true crime at that age, but I was terrified. I remember being terrified because there was a lot of this child abduction theme in our childhood.
Yes. Yes.
Like I remember there was kids kidnapped and murdered, I think, in Old Forge, which is
Free Jean Keane. Free Jean Keane.
Oh, really? Is that who that was?
Yeah, they were on their way to like a Little League game or something. Yeah, I have the book. And I remember like dad would tell me really fucked up details about that case when I was a kid. And like things that he knew were not true, but like lore, because those kids were killed when dad was a kid.
No. There was another abduction.
Oh.
That's what I thought. When you were saying that, that's an older one. That was like from the 50s.
Well, don't forget, we had Frank Ocelani killing and chopping up people.
There
and
was
stuff.
Kids. I remember we were
that
supposed
Renee
to have.
Renee Waddle, she was like four.
We were supposed to have a parade for twirling in Old Forge. And I was terrified to go. And I think I was like six when I was in twirling.
Yeah.
Because they had just found kids that were killed there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That was when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what case that was or who that was, but it was terrifying. Like it felt like a real threat all the time.
It really did. And so it's every parent's worst nightmare, Jenny, the image of your child's face as they peer out the rear window of a strange car as it drives away. And I remember
that's really specific.
I remember also seeing that image in, well, that's the image that sticks out to me from this movie.
I don't really remember the movie.
And I also remember in Mystic River when the girls kidnapped.
Yes.
Same thing. It's like that.
That movie portrayed this type of thing really well.
It did.
I thought.
It did. Don't even get me started on Sean Penn. We can't go down that rabbit hole.
Oh, he's so good at that.
So, Jenny, this is every parent's worst nightmare, but these abductions and kidnappings are not super common anymore, like even though they were when we were kids.
I have an index card.
Okay.
Well, this is what you told me to do it on, so.
Yeah, all right, go.
So, like, I just did some research on kidnapping statistics, like wondering, is this... It feels like it's much less of a thing, right, than it was.
Well, it's interesting because I wrote that sentence with zero facts behind it.
Oh, nice.
But, like, somehow I kind of knew that it was true.
So, all right. So don't ever use our podcast as any kind of, like, source of truth for anything that you're writing.
And don't let your bunny out into the woods like Jenny wanted.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm going to feel really bad if someone's, like, rabbit dies now because I told them to just set it free.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the most recent statistics on this, so the type of abduction we're talking to is what they call, like, in these, you know, in crime statistics, a stereotypical kidnapping. So this means it's a non-family abduction perpetrated by a stranger or a slight acquaintance in which the perpetrator either detains the child overnight, kills the child, transports the child 50 miles or further, demands ransom, or keeps the child permanently. So... the most common or the most recent crime statistics on this are from 2019. Although I've seen stuff, this was tough because there's like data all over the place.
Yeah.
And there's some good sources and some like just the way they're talking about it, like it's slightly different metric that they're looking at. So it's like, it's kind of confusing. But it seems like in the years between 2010 and 2017, fewer than 350 kids a year were, they have like, they've proven cases of kidnapping. There's reported, they're suspecting, but like this is how often they think it actually happens. So that's pretty low. That's like a 1 in 2.5 million chance.
Yeah, it's pretty low, but even now, like, you'll still see these stories on the news, like a man tried to lure a kid into a van in Moosic.
Yeah.
And you don't know if that's an attempted kidnapping or is it just somebody being paranoid. You know what I mean?
Right. And the most common ages are between 12 and 17. The most common reasons now are human trafficking. So those statistics I was giving were for the U.S. There's, you know, it's staggered all over the world. And in some areas it's much higher. In some areas it's almost non-existent. In the Washington Post, they published a study that the Justice Department just did not too long ago. Mm-hmm. And they looked at kidnapping in the 80s and 70s. Like, was this
Was it a thing?
And they say the amount of stereotypical kidnapping was 4,600 in 1988. So that's dramatically higher than 350 per year, right? With 100,000 attempted. I mean, the other thing you have to remember is now there's cameras everywhere.
Well, and that's, we live in a surveillance state. You're not going to get away with this stuff anymore.
Yeah. So, but the other thing.
Pro tip, if you're thinking of kidnapping a kid, don't, because you won't get away with it.
I mean, the other thing that this study did say, though, is that of those kids that were abducted by strangers, which was like 4,600, most of them were returned within, you know, a couple days. They got home within a couple days.
Right.
And then, but 200 to 300 either died or were permanently abducted. So that's still around the same statistic.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so still, okay. Doesn't happen a lot, but, you know, as I'm sure you can attest to as a parent, terrifying.
Terrifying. And I want to say, I don't know, like, it just seemed so much more reported when we were kids.
Did they just stick with us
because we were kids?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I think the attempts happen more than they do now, it seems like. Although now the vast majority of kidnappings are parental abductions. So this is when one parent takes the kid out of the state or whatever. In 1976, there were 60,000 parental abductions. In 1984, there were between 450,000 and 700,000.
Wow.
And in 2010, it was back down to like 200,000. So this is still the vast majority of kidnapping, this and runaways. So they don't consider that kidnapping, but reasons kids go missing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's terrifying, and it didn't help that we had a mother who was obsessed with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I don't think I realized how much she was obsessed with this kind of stuff until much later.
She was obsessed with Adam Walsh, John Walsh's.
Oh, that was the dude. What show was that?
America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
He is such a good dude.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Crazy. All right, Jenny. So here's what I did. When I was doing the research for all of this, I wrote down before I started doing any research what I remembered because then I could fact check my memory. Mm-hmm. So here's what I remembered. I remember being horrified by the events of Steven's real life story. You know, I remember seeing the movie. I remember Ken Parnell. I remember the creepy glasses that he wore. I remember him as very old, even though he wasn't. I remember him brainwashing Steven, telling him his parents didn't want him. I also remember that there was an illusion of sexual assault, but I wasn't sure. And I remember the story being like pretty simple, but the point that I got hung up on as a kid a lot was Steven had like a bunch of chances to escape, so why didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm like, you know, he's 12 years old, like just run away, like just start running.
How old was he when he was abducted?
Seven. We'll get into that. Yeah. So, like, when I was watching this movie, I just had no concept of psychological brainwashing or control, right? I just thought, like, you're out in the open, run away. So, and then I wrote, I would become very familiar with psychological control later during what I call my Manson phase.
Okay.
So, how reliable was my memory? Let's find out. So Steven was 7 years old the day he was abducted, Jenny. Seven.
Yeah, that's young.
Like, to put that into context, Macaulay Culkin was 10 in Home Alone.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Melissa Gilbert was 9 in the first season of Little House on the Prairie.
Okay.
This is 2 years younger than that. So he was young, and he was small. The average height and weight for a 7-year-old boy in the U.S. is 4 feet, 50 pounds. Wow, that's tall. Mm-hmm. He was smaller than that. By all accounts, he was very small for his age. He was walking home from school in Merced, California on December 4th, 1972, when a man approached him. This man, Edwin Irwin Murphy, asked Stephen if his mother would be willing to donate money to the local church. See, it's always the church.
Oh, God.
That gets you, lures you in. Stephen guessed she would.
I mean, the church is great. I'm not making fun of religion.
Stephen guessed she would, since his mother had often shown acts of kindness towards others, especially the church. So he said yes. Then Murphy offered to drive him home to collect the donation. Stephen refused the ride a few times since he was only blocks from his home, But Murphy was unrelenting. Now, in the movie, they show the kid, like, very willingly getting in the car. Like, yeah. There's no turning it down.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting. And I'll talk about the movie and, you know, the discrepancies in a minute. So Stephen finally agreed to let the man give him a ride home. It was December. It was cold. It was sleeting. Stephen was 7 again.
Well, and of course, 7-year-olds walking home alone. Like, well, you can tell it's the 70s.
So his mother was supposed to pick him up from school, but she got delayed at the, she got delayed because of bad customer service. So let's just blame this on bad customer service.
Okay, what happened?
I don't know. She was at a store and she was like having some difficulty and, you know, the checking out was slow and stuff like that.
Oh my God. Okay.
So by the time she got to the school, he was gone. Oh, and then she got home and he wasn't there.
Ugh.
And so, like, they wait a couple hours. Like, could you imagine seven. Jesus Christ. So the two, the Stephen and this Edwin Irwin, get in a car nearby where 41-year-old Kenneth Parnell is waiting. 41, Jenny. 15 years younger than you.
No, that's not how math works. First of all.
Parnell had been waiting for this for a while. He had been watching Stephen walk home for weeks now. And thanks to a gossipy postal worker.
Oh, man.
He even knew that Stephen had recently gotten in trouble with his parents over something and had gotten a spanking. And he knew this was his time to strike. Like, why the postal worker is saying this is
weird. That's fucking weird. And like, there's two grown men talking about this?
Yeah. So my sources here, guys, are ABC News, CNN, The Seattle Times, and then I went down a rabbit hole on YouTube and watched a 12-hour documentary on this case.
Did you really?
I did. Over the period of a few days, but I did.
Oh, Jesus.
So let me tell you a little bit about Ken Parnell. So Ken Parnell was born in Texas in 1931 during the Dust Bowl, which we know was horrific.
Yes. Right.
Yes. He had a rough upbringing. His father abandoned the family when Parnell was 6. His mother took him and a few of his half-sisters to Bakersfield, California, where she ran a boarding house. At a young age, Parnell exhibited some strange behavior. At 4, Jenny, he tried to pull his teeth out with pliers.
Wow. At 4? Jesus, that's fucking weird. Yikes.
That is according to the podcast True Crime California, which has a really good episode on this.
Hmm.
So at 9, he shone a light in his eye for a long period of time and did permanent damage.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Shortly after, he tried to commit suicide by shooting himself in the stomach.
Holy shit.
Jumping into a wood pile with the nails pointed up.
Wow.
And he also drank a bottle of disinfectant.
Holy, at 9.
Around this time, yeah. Like young, Jesus, young adolescents. That's fucking
crazy.
Yep. He once told the therapist he thought about suicide at least once a month.
Oh my God. And like at this time, no one did anything about, like, they, depression wasn't a thing. They didn't talk about that then.
But I'm immediately like, so he was in therapy. That's pretty progressive at this time.
That is, actually. But I mean, yeah. He sounds like a severe case.
It sounds like it was probably a situation where he's getting therapeutic intervention in like a boys' detention home, which he was in. Yeah. So according to Mike Eccles, the author of I Know My First Name is Stephen, Parnell was in and out of juvenile detention and mental hospitals all throughout his adolescence. Around the age of 13 or 14, he told police he was raped by a man at his mother's boarding house, but he later recanted this allegation.
Oh,
so
God.
We don't know. Now... In 1950, at 19 years old, Parnell's arrested in California for sodomy with the child.
Oh, Jesus.
He had bought a fake police badge and impersonated a policeman. He convinced an 8-year-old boy to get into his car, drove him out to a field somewhere, assaulted him, and dropped him back off. The boy's father called police, and Parnell was convicted of impersonating an officer and lewd behavior.
That's it.
That's it.
Lewd behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
He was committed for being a, quote, sexual psychopath, but only served 3.5 years in prison. Now, wow. I started to research California laws here. But I don't want to bore you, and I don't want to enrage you. Here it is in a nutshell. In the 30s, 40s, and 50s, sodomy, which they consider a crime against nature, anal, or animal, right, was considered homosexual activity and was a felony. So sodomy is a felony up to this point. Right. Yes. All right. So Parnell would say his wife was pregnant at the time and her belly was too big. She was too big for him, Jenny. He just couldn't have sex with her. So an 8-year-old boy had to fill in.
Oh, my God.
So he, as a result of this, so he serves 3.5 years in prison, which is insane. And he has to register as a sex offender.
Okay.
So these lists in the 50s were mostly comprised of people who were gay, since sodomy was illegal and got you on the list. 90% of the people on the list were charged with sexual perversion, which just meant sodomy with another male. So, in other words, the cops and the officials in different counties and states did not take this list very seriously because they knew it was mostly gay people.
Well, and it sounds like he wasn't convicted of kidnapping a child, raping a child.
No. Nope.
Wow.
Nope.
Wow.
So he was able to avoid detection by just moving to another county because, again, we didn't have agencies that talked to each other.
Yes.
We didn't have some national mainframe or anything like that.
Yep.
So in 1960, Parnell did 6 years in jail for armed robbery in Utah. He worked odd jobs. He moved around a lot. He had a few run-ins with the law, did some more time in a mental institution. And in 1972, he's working at Yosemite Lodge as a night clerk.
Why is that important to me?
You'll see later.
You just said that in a way that I feel like I should know something about that.
He's living in a small cabin nearby. I feel like there has been, I don't know if it's just what I'm watching. Again, go back to the episode where I talk about my TikTok feed, which is totally dystopian. Oh, but I've also been watching a lot of true crime lately that centers on like janitors and people who have keys to people's apartments for like official reasons. Now that freaks me out.
Yeah, totally. I feel like also there was a lot of angst around national parks when we were kids.
Really?
Yeah, like that was a place where you could get abducted or like.
I never went to a national park.
Oh, that's a state park.
I've gone to state parks, but I never went to a national park.
I feel like around parks, like those big parks, that was like always a thing too.
So Jenny, at this time, Yosemite is like really kind of isolated and it's considered a place where people go to hide, a place that attracts drifters and free spirits.
Oh, so I mean, I'm not imagining this. Like this is what people were doing in national parks and state parks when we were kids.
But put a pin in this.
Okay.
Because we're going to come back to it. So this is where Parnell meets that creep, Edward Irvin Murphy. So Murphy's described as a mentally impaired and easily manipulated by the people who knew him. Parnell befriends this dude and tells him he's studying to become a religious leader and is being called upon by God to guide young boys spiritually. And Parnell completely manipulated him and told him that God told him he was meant to save a child who was being abused. So that's where Stephen Stainer comes in, because Parnell used that information from the postal worker that Stephen Stainer was being spanked. And that's how he connected these dots for Murphy and got Murphy to lure Stephen into the car.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So back in the afternoon of the abduction, after abducting Stephen, Parnell drives him to a cabin in Cathy's Valley, California, where Stephen's nightmare would begin. Along the way, Parnell stops and makes a call from a payphone. He gets back in the car and tells Stephen his parents don't want him anymore.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. So he's telling him he doesn't want him anymore, and he's using again this, your dad said you got in trouble recently, you were bold right. over this.
So he's just that he using is talking that. To his parents. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the cabin is isolated. Stephen has no idea where he is. For the first few nights, Murphy and Parnell are there together with him. And Parnell tells Stephen, oh, I called your mother and she's given you permission to stay the night. And then after a few days, Parnell leaves and comes back and tells Stephen he went to court and has been granted custody of him.
Wow.
Because his parents, who had four other children, could not afford to raise him.
Holy shit.
And at this point, he convinces Stephen to change his name to Dennis and to call him Dad.
Wow.
And this is the part in the movie where they put a really bad wig on this kid.
Yeah.
And they, like, dye it black. And I remember that.
Okay.
I never forget a bad wig. Because I'm going to end up wearing a wig someday because of my balding situation. So, like, I'm always on the lookout for how do wigs look on people and can I find a good one? So, Jenny, it's important to note here that the Stainer family searched frantically for Stephen. Like, they did everything right.
Yeah.
They called the police. Kay and Dill are the parents. Dilbert, but they call him Dill. They called the police immediately because you do not, contrary to popular opinion, you do not have to wait 24 hours when a small child is missing.
No.
In fact, they're right. the most crucial.
Right, because a small child's probably not running away.
Right.
Or if they run away, they run away, like, to the yard.
Jane, did you ever run away? I imagine you tried to. Yeah. Well, we know you ran away as a teenager.
Yeah.
But did you ever try to run away as a small kid?
I don't think so. If I did, I don't remember.
No. Okay. You weren't stupid. You knew you controlled the house and you weren't leaving. You did pretty okay, good there. Whatever. Jenny ran things. So they engaged the community. The entire community was really supportive of these people. In fact, Kay, I saw an interview with Kay and she talks about, like, some of these people brought them psychics. One dude even confessed to the murder because he felt like they needed closure.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And these psychics were telling them that Stephen was dead and buried somewhere with a lot of tin cans. So they're ripping up landfills. They're ripping up hillsides. Like, they're ripping
listening
up
California. Listening to psychics. So we were actually listening to psychics. Okay.
Okay. Now that was a thing. That was a thing.
That was a thing.
It was. Sylvia Brown. Yeah. Sylvia Brown.
Oh God. I remember that. Yeah.
Whenever she was on Oprah or whatever, Graham would, like, everything in Graham's world would stop to watch Sylvia Brown. So the FBI was not brought in. So the FBI didn't work this case because they had no evidence that he had crossed state lines with Stephen. And he did it.
California.
Right. He did it.
So the FBI can't get involved unless they know they've crossed state lines?
I don't know. Legal memes come at us with that if that's a thing.
Legal meme. But our legal team and the meme bees come at us with some information here.
All I'm saying is that was the reason they didn't get involved in this case. I don't know if that's true anymore. So they were right, though. Parnell moved Stainer around a little bit, but mostly stayed in Northern California. And he showered Stephen with gifts. He also routinely raped him.
Okay.
This is an important part of the story, because when Steven is returned, he claims at first that that's false.
Huh.
And we'll talk about why.
I feel like there. I totally believe it happened.
110%.
Given this guy's history.
Yes. Yeah. So Parnell allowed Steven to live however he wanted. Drugs, alcohol, he let him drive, he let him do whatever he wanted.
At like 8 years old?
This was probably around the time he was 10 or 11.
Jesus.
Yeah. So in one scene from the movie, Steven is 9 or 10 years old and he's drinking beer in a hotel room. Parnell and some woman return home, start having sex in front of him, and Parnell insists that Steven join in. Like, this is the kind of life this dude lived. Oh my God. Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that woman?
I know. I know. In the 7 years total that Steven was held by Parnell, Steven had plenty of opportunities to escape. He was enrolled in school, where he could have told any number of people what was happening. Parnell worked long days, often leaving Steven for hours and hours alone in their home. And this was the part that confused me as a kid. Like, why didn't he run?
Well, because he
didn't. Why didn't he leave?
He thought that his parents abandoned him.
So Kay, in this interview, says at one point he did escape. It was within the first few days. But he's at this remote cabin in Northern California and he's 7.
Yeah.
And well, he goes outside and he doesn't know what the fuck to do.
Right.
What so he's like, I don't know. So he honestly believed his parents didn't want him. He says that he looked at newspapers for signs of them searching for him.
Oh.
But never saw anything. He grew up angry. He grew up abused. He grew up confused. And he was isolated with Parnell and found himself more confused than ever when he reached 14 and Parnell started to lose interest in him.
Oh, boy.
Okay. God. So when Parnell asks for Steven's help in selecting a new boy and luring a new victim into his car, Steven reluctantly agrees. Again, at this point, Steven is 14 and he has spent exactly the same amount of time with Parnell as he did with his family of origin. Right.
So he's effed up, probably.
100%.
Yeah.
So he depended on Parnell. He knew no other life and he sought his approval. Yet when push came to shove, Steven often failed to seal the deal in these attempted abductions.
So he never actually lured anybody.
He would make mistakes all the time. He later admitted that he sabotaged those efforts on purpose. Mm-hmm. But Jen, there's always a stoner you can bribe. So his friend, Sean Portman, was offered drugs and some cash if he would help.
This is Steven's friend.
Yeah, if he would help Parnell out. So he did. Okay. Now, Steven, I'm sure, would welcome a brother. After all, he came from a home of 5 children. He spent a lot of time alone, especially at night, as Parnell had gotten a night security job somewhere. Yet when blonde-haired...
How does this guy get hired as a security guard?
I know.
He's got this crazy criminal record.
This is what drives me so crazy about this time period. No one could check anything.
How could you should be able to do background checks on people?
I don't know. And if it's some little, little fly by night place where he's getting paid under the table, they just probably didn't even do it. You know, Jen, he's a boomer white guy. They trusted him.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
So when 5-year-old Timmy White was brought home and introduced as his new brother, Steven knew in his gut he had to save this innocent kid
from the nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jesus.
From the nightmare that he lived through. And he, that day, made a decision that they were going to escape.
Wow.
So on March 1st, 1980, 16 days after Timmy White walked into Ken Parnell's cabin, Steven packed them up and they walked a quarter mile down to the road, hitched a ride, and he brought Timmy to the Ukiah police station.
Wow.
He was only going to send Timmy in alone. He pulls up and he's like, you go.
Yeah.
But Timmy was like scared because he was 5. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to go in alone. So they're like struggling outside the police station and a cop sees this and he brings them both in. And that's when they discover he's Steven Stainer.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So over the next few days, both boys are reunited with their families and Parnell was arrested. Back in Merced, which is called the Gateway to Yosemite, Steven's older brother, Cary Stainer, and I'll talk more about their reunion as I talk about the movie, was just getting ready to graduate high school when his little brother, Steven, comes home. So Carrie's the oldest of the kids. Mm-hmm. He is 11 when Steven goes missing. So 4 years different. So like, think of how your life would have been destroyed had I been kidnapped when you were 11 years old. Okay. So losing Steven had been a crushing blow to him. And the two were reportedly very close. Friends of Cary Stainer would report that he would wish on a star for his brother's return. And I'm like, nerd.
Which it's all psychics and wishing on stars. No wonder why these kids didn't get found.
He's, let me clarify, he's not a nerd for wanting his brother back, but he's kind of a nerd for wishing on a star for it.
God. If they just did actual police work, they may have gotten these kids back.
Yes. So he developed nervous tics like pulling his hair out, which do you remember when I pulled all my eyebrows out in college?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Yep, I remember that.
So then he started doing weird shit with women.
Oh, no.
That's all I got for that. He later claimed he was neglected by his parents, who spent several years searching for their missing younger son. So we see this a lot.
Yeah.
A younger sibling is murdered or, God forbid, you know, whatever. And the rest of the family kind of falls apart. I mean, it's just that's what grief does to families. Upon Steven's return, his parents really struggle with parenting him. Because he's like been living as an adult. Right. So he wants to continue doing that. He wants to smoke and drink and do drugs.
And he's 14.
And he's 14.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of tension between him and his father. Because his father still wants to parent him like he's 7.
Right.
And he's just not that person anymore. Okay. So Steven also has to face Parnell in court.
Oh, God. Could you imagine?
I know. Parnell is sentenced to 7 years in prison.
That's it.
That's it.
For kidnapping a fucking kid for 7 years.
2 counts of kidnapping and raping. 1 count of false imprisonment.
Oh, so they didn't.
Afraid of the ridicule, Stephen denied at first that he was raped by Parnell. Jenny, there are press conferences. Let me talk a little bit about. There's a new show out on Hulu about this. It's a series, and it's called Captive Audience. It came out last year, and I watched it in preparation for this. I didn't see all of it, but I watched a couple episodes. And one of the things that they did that was really fucked up is the media was all over this.
Oh, I bet.
Not when he counted, and they could have helped find him.
Right.
But when he was reunited, okay?
Of course.
And the mother admits that she made a big mistake. She's like, you know, the community was such a big part of us, like helping us through this process, that when Steven came back, I allowed everybody into our lives because I wanted them to share in this joy with us that he was back. Mm. So she gave the press like unfettered access to him.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a mistake.
Here's something fucked up, right? So the cops show up at her house. It's 3 a.m. Knock, knock, knock. We're here about your son. She assumes they're here about Cary, who's like a wild person by this time.
Right.
And he had gotten camping. They're like, oh, I'm assuming he's drunk or something, whatever. And they're like, no, we're here about your son, Steven. He's alive.
Oh, my God.
And he's in Ukiah, which is, you know, 2 to 3 hours north, I think, of them. Mm-hmm. They want to get in the car and go right up there.
Of course.
And the police are like, no, we have to question him. We have to get the story. Like, you know, it's going to have to wait. Up in Ukiah, meanwhile, they march him out for a fucking press conference.
Seriously?
So this kid hasn't even reunited with his family.
Wow.
And they put him down in front of a room full of press.
Wow.
And they're like asking him questions. So fucking crazy.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, during the trial, it comes out that they have found Polaroids of him naked when he was 7 in Parnell's possessions. So on the stand, Steven does admit that he was raped by Parnell. So Parnell Jen serves only 5 years of his sentence.
Unbelievable.
Less time than he held Steven captive.
Unbelievable.
And by 1986, he was a free man.
Ugh. Yeah.
So one of the things I want to say too is it was really interesting because the mother, so let me back up. The daughter, Stephen, went on to get married and have two kids, which I'll talk about in a minute. The daughter was only four when he eventually dies. Okay. She wanted to make this documentary on Hulu because she wanted to have the family's point of view in this story. Okay. So there's interviews with all the family members. So there's interviews with Kay, his mother. Mm-hmm. She says, I made a terrible mistake because I always taught my kids to respect authority mm-hmm. and to trust authority figures.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. that's what the boomers did.
Mm-hmm. Stephen returns to school and he's ridiculed. Kids are calling of him course. Gay. Mm-hmm. Kids are questioning his sexuality. Where's your purse? You know, stuff like that. Because he was,
unbelievable.
Again, brutally raped
wow.
by an adult as a child. Stephen, okay, so you would think, as parents, you'd want your kid to get some help for this.
Yeah.
But Dill does not want Stephen to go to therapy.
Oh, Lord.
He doesn't believe in it.
Wow. But he believes in fucking psychics mm-hmm. and wishing on stars. Oh, no, that mm-hmm. was the brother that was wishing on the star, but still.
And Stephen at this time. So here's something really interesting they did in the Hulu documentary also. They took, so the person who did the movie, I know my first name is Stephen, did extensive interviews with the family, like embedded himself with the family. And he recorded all of the interviews. So this documentary maker printed them all out and had the original actors from the movie read them and talk about it.
It
was a really unique documentary. The guy who played Stephen in the miniseries was Corin Nevin, who I had a huge crush on.
Oh, God.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Google him. I want you to look at him. I just want you to see him. Corin Nemec. N-E-M-E-C. He was so cute. And he was Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
Okay.
Do you remember Parker Lewis Can't Lose?
Yes, I do remember that.
Jenny, he was adorable. Look at him. He's kind of hot now. Okay. Anyway. He was reading the scripts and he was talking about the interviews, and it was really interesting to hear his perspective on this character that he played.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It was just, it was a really cool way to do it.
Did he ever meet the real Stephen?
Oh, yes. The whole family was very involved in the making of the movie.
Oh, interesting.
But they didn't like it. I'll get to that.
Okay.
So, anyway, during these interviews, these raw interviews that the original director had, original writer had taken.
Because it's Stephen, a book, right?
Yes. Stephen says he did not want to talk about the sexual abuse. And therefore, he didn't want to go to therapy. So we don't know if he was just kind of being influenced by his father's reluctance to it. Or if he genuinely would have kind of fought back against being
I feel like that's probably the instinct of most people, like a lot of people in that situation. Mm-hmm. But like, you have to get your kid help.
Yeah. Yep. So Stephen Stainer comes home. He makes it through high school. And at 20 years old, he marries Jody. And they had two kids. His life, however, ended tragically in a deadly motorcycle accident in 1989. He was 24.
Oh, wow.
And Timmy White, who was only 14 at the time, was a pallbearer at his funeral.
Aww.
And it's important to note that Stephen was considered a hero.
Yeah, like he absolutely. Saved
Timmy White's life.
No question. No question.
And so he's getting all this fame. I mean, he's on Good Morning America. There is a super cringy interview with him via satellite talking to Hugh Downs on Good Morning America. And Hugh Downs is asking him, like, did Kim Parnell ever touch you inappropriately?
Oh my God.
It's so fucking weird. It's so weird. But anyway, so he gets tons of, like, you know, trips and gifts. And, like, the media just love him. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, his brother, Carrie, is given these interviews like, well, Stephen just did what anybody would have done. Typical older sis. Typical.
Oh, God.
He's like, oh, you know, who wouldn't have saved that kid? Oh, Stevie's boy. No hero. Like, just, you know, and then he would, like, catch himself and temper it. And in one interview at the end, he goes, you know, I don't know why he was getting all this attention, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, you know, I guess he did a good thing. He got what he deserved. And, like, you're on that line. Like, he got what he deserved. And so they had the actor who played the brother in the movie reading this interview. Mm-hmm. And the brother and the actor's going, wow, that could really be said one of two ways, couldn't it? It could be like, he got what he deserved. You know, like, he deserved the praise. Or mm-hmm. he got what he deserved. It could really be read two different ways. So, Jenny, Steven's a hero, but you know who's not a fucking hero? Carrie Strainer, his older sib. So he's struggling with his own mental health issues long before Steven's death. Things get worse after. He disappears for long stretches of time, Jen, into Yosemite.
Oh, no.
You remember, Jen, the place where people go to forget, remember? So he's getting, like, weirder and weirder with women. He's exposing himself to a friend's sister. He's getting more aggressive. He tells a friend he feels like jumping in a truck, driving it through a shop, and killing the boss and killing everybody in the office, and then torching the place. Like, wow. Okay. But instead of seeking mental health, he ends up taking refuge in Yosemite. And in 1997, just like Parnell, he gets a job there. Only now the handyman at the lodge. Okay. Now, according to ABC News, Strainer had been at Cedar Lodge for 2 years when Carol Sund, her daughter Julie Sund, and her friend Silvina Peloso, the girls are teenagers, the mom is, you know, in her 40s or whatever. They come by Yosemite and they're just chilling for one night there. And that night, he talks their way into their room under the guise of fixing a leak in the sink, sexually assaults them, murders all three of them.
Oh, my God. The mm-hmm. brother.
Yep.
This is his older brother, Steven's yep. older brother.
Yeah.
Wow.
Older sib. I'm telling you, he has to outdo Steven now.
He's going to be like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a murderer.
Yeah, pretty much. So the FBI finds the women within a few weeks, but they have no leads. So 5 months pass, nothing. The community thinks they're in the clear. This must have been a drifter drifting through whatever. Now, this Jesus. Is in the 90s.
Wow.
The list winds up dead. And when I'm talking dead, I mean, she's decapitated.
Wow.
Her body's found like 7 feet from her head.
Wow.
The police have reports of Carrie's car near the scene. So he had been interviewed for the other murders, but like didn't raise a red flag with them in any way. Guys, always look at the handyman. Always.
Okay. Are you just going to malign all handymen now?
No. But start there. The husband, then the handyman.
The husband is first. I was going to say. It's all like the husband is number one.
So, Jen, this time they bring him in. And guess what he does? He confesses.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's arrested. He's sentenced to death. And he is 57 years old. He's on death row. And he's known as the Yosemite Killer. He's killed four women.
Holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts.
When a friend asked him if he needed anything after his arrest, Carrie said he wanted a film crew and a movie of the week to be made about him, just like his brother.
No.
Bam!
Yes. Oh, my God. Yes.
I just wrote capital letters. Wow. This is a move Jenny would make.
No, it's not. Definitely not, first of all. God.
You would try to outdo me. I know you would.
But, like, not by murdering people.
Right. Yeah, you would probably go the altruistic route and, like, try to help people and become a saint of some kind.
Yeah, something. Right, I would get canonized.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Jenny, what do you think of this?
It's fucking bizarre. I had no idea his brother was a serial killer.
Yeah, because I think it's over 3 year serial killer, right?
I mean, yeah.
Is that how that works? Let's just say his brother was a murderer.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I was really surprised. And I will tell you this. Watching that documentary, I highly recommend to everybody the Hulu documentary. Again, it's called Captive Audience. they interview his kids. His kids are grown now. Steven's kids.
This is Steven's kids. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And they're lovely people. And like his mom even talks about what a, and the wife, who, you know, if there's going to be anybody who would air out the bad baggage, it would be the wife.
Right.
She says he was a wonderful father. He was really excited to be a father. He was really supportive of the miniseries. So the guy comes to him to do the miniseries.
This is after the book is written.
Yeah. Offers him some money. And he's like, yeah, we'll do it. They fly the family to the set. They treat them like royalty. They're very involved. And then the movie comes out and Dill hates it because he thinks he was, you know, falsely maligned for being whatever. A bad father. I guess. I don't. He wasn't a bad father. He was just a man of that time. Yep, do you know what totally. I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
But I will tell you this. When you watch footage of Steven being returned, Dill runs up to him and is the first person to throw his arms around him and hug him. It's really interesting because I would expect Dill to be like standing back and being a little standoffish. Yeah. But it's, and the documentary also goes into the differences between the book or the movie and the real story. And they actually play clips of the movie and show you the differences. Mm. It's really interesting. It's a good documentary. So that's our true crime case, Jenny. So I'm going to give you a minute to think about a why that you can deduct from this.
Oh, I have a why.
And I'm going to give you mine. So mine is, this is why I always teach my kids, if you're lost, look for a mother. This is what I always tell them. Because we have way too many people pretending to be cops.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, even with the Murdoch murders, I don't know if you watched that.
No.
Alex Murdoch's, like, walking around with a, like, fake police badge of some kind. Oh my God. Like, trying to throw his power around. So, I always taught my kids, and I learned that from, I don't know, one of the daytime shows, like Oprah or something. Like, if your kids are lost, tell them to look for a mother with kids.
Like, a woman with kids. With her. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you can't find a mother with kids, just a woman is fine. Less chance of being brutally murdered. All right, Jenny, what is your why for this episode?
This is why we were terrified to go anywhere in public all the time when we were kids. And like, we're all like, have like mental illness now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we just thought there was maniacs everywhere.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Because I feel like now we're very careful about things. And I think, you know, I was talking with mom about this the other day. Like, Gen Xers raise their kids completely different. Like, we raise our kids not to trust anybody.
Don't trust anybody. Nope.
Although there was the whole stranger danger thing. But
yeah,
I don't know. I feel like that was later.
I don't remember. I remember, like, them telling you, like, don't take candy from strangers.
Right, but that's not what abductions look like.
I know. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Is, like, they, abductors, you know, get a piece of information or learn something about the victim, and then they regurgitate that, just like what Purnell did with Steven. Mm-hmm. And then they think that they know their life and they trust them.
Yeah.
Because they have information about their family or their life, and they think they know them. So they give, like, the illusion of familiarity when it's not there at all. And you can't trust what people are saying.
True. I will say, too, just an FYI for you true crime buffs out there. The guy who wrote the miniseries, I know my first name is Steven, also wrote the movie Helter Skelter.
So wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think was that is true now that wasn't true then is, like, we protect the privacy of kids a lot better now than we used to.
Oh yeah.
Like, it's way harder to get information about children. Like, even, you know, I mean, obviously the internet's a big part of that and having to protect kids' privacy on the internet, but I think just in general, like, we're better at, like it would be harder to get information on kids now.
Yeah, I was trying to think
than it would have been then.
If you guys are new to our podcast or just listening to this in isolation, we cover a lot of Little House, and at the end we jokingly say, whose fault is this? And I was like, whose fault is this? And I'm like, is it the nosy postal worker?
Yeah, maybe.
Who kind of gave Parnell that piece of information that he needed? Or would he have gotten another piece of information?
He would, we don't know. He would have maybe gotten another kid. Like, it seems like that helped him pick Steven.
Well, he had been watching Steven.
Yeah.
So he'd been looking for something, and then he just needed, like, you know.
God, what a creep.
20-year-old Amy to come around and be blabbing everyone's business. So, Jenny, I'm just going to read you the very quick, because I don't want to give Ken Parnell any more air than that motherfucker deserves.
Right.
But I'm just going to sum up what happened to him by reading the Wikipedia entry. In January 2003, Parnell is arrested again after trying to coerce his caregiver's sister into buying him a 4-year-old boy for $500.
Jesus Christ.
Parnell was 71 years old at this time. He had emphysema, diabetes, and he had suffered a stroke. He was requiring 24-hour care, and he was living in Berkeley. The caregiver was aware of his past and cooperated with police in setting up a sting operation that led to his arrest.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get into details, but I will say it was gross. And he was convicted on February 9th, 2004. He was sentenced to 25 years to life under California's 3 strikes law. So Parnell remained incarcerated until his death at the age of 76, January 21st, 2008. And he died of natural causes.
Is the brother still in prison? Dead?
The brother's still in prison.
Wow.
He's still in prison. So, like, this is just so interesting because it's the snowball effect.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know, like, if this had happened to Steven, would Carrie have been as troubled as he was? Like, you don't know.
You don't know. Yeah.
It's really interesting how this brother tried to outdo his younger sister. I mean,
that probably fucked up that family indefinitely. Like, that, I can't imagine that would all
100%
would happen if this didn't happen to them.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right, Jenny, any closing thoughts?
No. I'm going to watch that documentary, though.
It's really good. It's really good. All right, guys, this has been Gen X, That Was a Thing. If you haven't already, check out our Little House episodes. And we also put 2 episodes a month on our Patreon, where you can find in the show notes. And you can find My So-Called Life, so far, is what we're doing. And we're doing some other stuff. We talked about Waco.
Oh, yeah, that would be good.
There's a new Waco miniseries out we might have to talk about.
Yeah.
And then we just dropped our coverage of Pamela, A Love Story. So check that out if you haven't already. And we'll meet you again in May, I guess. This is going out in April. I'm going to put this out the first week of April.
Okay.
So we'll do something else for May. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. Thanks so much, and we'll see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.